Hello to everyone listening. I'm Carmen, and this is part of the interview series for My Horse Heart. Today's guest is Gail Boone, a colleague of mine joining us from Nova Scotia. I know Gail from our leadership and equine-facilitated learning trainings in Arizona, and I was so fortunate to get to know her in this process. Welcome to My Horse Heart, Gail.
Thank you very much, Carmen. It's a delight, actually, to be here and to do this with you.
And it's such a delight for me, too. I'm so glad you said yes.
Thank you.
Would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll make it really brief. I started out as a nurse a very long time ago, taught nursing for about a decade, and then moved into management roles with a public sector organization and had an opportunity to do frontline management with a variety of teams and build teams to deliver excellent service in a public service entity. I moved through as a manager into an executive role as a director of human resources with a provincial government, and had an opportunity to serve a team that supported five different government departments. I've spent a lot of my time doing leadership development and organizational development. I had an opportunity to teach at the Masters of Health Admin program at Dalhousie University for about 14 years. And throughout that time, I've also done some private work, both in facilitation and leadership development. So spending time coaching, I'm a professional coach as well, a certified executive coach. And finally, bringing all of that together into equine facilitated coaching and learning. So that's a little bit about me. It's always a challenge to talk about oneself, but that's a little bit about what has me to the stage where I am in my life.
Well, that's incredibly impressive, and no wonder it's a little challenging. There's a lot to keep track of there. Your background really has impressed me since the moment I met you. And I must tell our listeners, Gail really embodies this in the real world. I mean, going through the apprenticeship and training process that we did, the whole group was so lucky to have Gail part of it to share some nuggets of wisdom and really amplify what we were learning with her background. And that's part of why I'm so excited that you're joining us today, because I really want to hear from you how this equine work has impacted you and where you think this is going professionally for you.
That's a really good question. Thank you for asking it. You know, when you spend a lot of time in the area of leadership development and organizational development, you spend a lot of time growing your own self-awareness and wanting to make sure that you practice what you preach and that you don't hold a standard of behavior that is different for you than the one that you hold for everybody else, or the one that you stand up in front of a bunch of people or a number of people and espouse as the way to move forward. So I did a lot of work in growing my own self-awareness, leading myself, managing myself, learning all about social and emotional intelligence. But this really kicked it up a notch. The equine facilitated work invites you in a very different way to learn about yourself and also about the impact that you're going to have on another sentient being. In the first instance, horses, in the second instance, people. And so the lessons that you learn as you engage with a horse really teach you a lot about the way you are showing up in that relationship. And that awareness, as you grow that awareness, you can translate that knowledge into the way that you show up in relationship with people. And so I would have to say that it really has enhanced my ability to go deep and to be present, to be mindful, and to simply be in relationship with others without having any expectations of the way that they are going to be in relationship with me, but really taking responsibility for the way that I'm showing up. And that's, I think, the way that I would answer the question initially, just from my heart. That's the way that I would, that's the way that I'd talk about that.
That's great. And I couldn't agree more. I really sense that challenge and deepening in myself as well, doing this horse work. So in the business context, there can be some skepticism, right? Because people don't want to get involved in something that's too woo-woo or too kind of out there. How do you think this work really impacts the day-to-day life of people at work?
Well, I have started to talk about this work with business leaders, and I think they fall into two, at least a couple of divisions or camps, if you will. And the people who are really concerned about growing team, growing relationship, understanding that the effectiveness of the team depends a lot on the leadership that they are able to demonstrate. People that really get that, get this. They get this work. They see this as a means to sharpen or deepen or grow their ability to be reflective, their ability to take a look inward, and they are up for a growth challenge. That those are the people that this work has a lot of meaning for. And then unfortunately, there are other leaders that we know of, we experience as we go through our organizational lives, who believe that they have mastered everything that they need to master in order to be able to be effective. And so they aren't as open to learning something new, whether that's this work or other work that requires some kind of personal or professional development, and they are resistant to that. And so that audience is harder to win over. And with that audience, if there's an opening, any kind of an opening for different thinking or demonstrating by some experience that you can share with them or some story that you can tell with them about how it has made a meaningful difference, then perhaps you can open a heart a little bit. It's much easier to work with the former group because they're curious. The latter group, this work may not initially be perceived to be a fit. That starts to change, however, when they see things change for other people. And when they start to see things change for other people, then it's a little bit like Meg Ryan and Harry Met Sally. You know, can I have a little bit of that too? So that's, I think, my initial musings on that. That, you know, this work is very meaningful for people who want to do it. Incredibly meaningful for people who want to do it. And leaders who take seriously their curiosity about what kind of an impact am I having on my team, on my customers, on the other people in my organization and the relationships that I need to have with other organizations outside my own. Leaders who sit with that question get this work.
Yeah. And I think we're living in an age where an emphasis on emotional intelligence and social intelligence is really being brought into the workplace more and more. However, there's still a lot of people and organizations who, like you say, are really not open to that. Can you give us some, like, paint a picture for us of what it would look like for an organization that really does not value those skills? What does that look like when you actually are there?
When you encounter one?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we were having this conversation at this time because I'm actually writing an article for a magazine that I write for on a regular basis, and that's exactly the topic. this is, you know, this is the question is, this is a middle manager in a public sector organization with a boss who's a member of the senior management team. And this middle manager is having to protect themselves and their staff from a boss who's creating a toxic workplace. Yes. You know, so what it looks like is just a lack of the living of the values that an organization espouses. It looks like behavior that is not socially intelligent or emotionally intelligent. And it looks like disrespect. It looks like belittling. It looks like inconsideration. It looks like threats. It can look like a number of things that none of us really want to experience in our daily life. And, you know, sometimes it also looks like a real misalignment between what an organization says on paper about what it values and the culture that you actually experience when you work inside the organization. There's an undercurrent of fear, and people experience that fear in a variety of ways. And there's a culture of mistrust. And so that's hard to uncover in an organization, because a lot of times the people who are doing the bullying know really well how to manage up. So their superiors don't see it, but the people who report to them live it and feel it on a fairly regular basis. And people are afraid to come forward because they don't want to be the one to blow the whistle. They're worried about retribution, and they often don't trust the policies or the procedures or the mechanisms that are inside the organization to try and help, because they've just learned not to trust. And the fear is so real that they're just afraid to take the risk. And so they often have the question of, you know, what am I supposed to do? And it's a difficult one to answer for them.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Do you think this work could be helpful? I mean, the work with the horses that we've been training for and developing different leadership skills for, would it be helpful for someone who's working in that kind of environment as a you know, single person? Or do you think it's only helpful when you look at it from a managerial or leadership level?
No, I think it's absolutely helpful. And in particular, the program that we've just recently completed, which is, you know, the Master Herder program. That one is particularly helpful, because what it does is it talks about the roles that we need to master in order to be able to be really effective leaders. And what I love about it is it talks about these roles both in their mature and their immature state, and helps us understand also to distinguish between predatory and non-predatory power. So when you can start to talk to people in terms of behavior, and you can ask them to understand that this is behavior. Yes, you are on the receiving end of this particular behavior, but it isn't about you personally. It's about the skill or the lack of skill that the individual exhibiting the behavior, the lack of maturity in their leadership skill that you are on the receiving end of. So when you start to talk about that, illuminate that, and invite people to think differently about that, then what happens is some clarity comes for them. And so then they can start to recognize behavior for what it is, and invite skill building, invite programs and activity that helps to build skill, so that everybody can be equipped just a little bit differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully reduce some of that stress and anxiety associated to the whole experience too.
You know, it is tough in situations where people are not open. And if I don't want to see the behavior, how my behavior is affecting somebody else, then that's difficult. However, stop worrying about me and my behavior and skill the others so that the people who I am having an effect on, if we are able to help them understand the response of my behavior on them, and they're able to grow their skill and they're able to find their voice and they are able to set their boundaries and they are able to ask for what they need and lead through relationship or encourage a different behavior because their skill has been built, then individually and collectively, they can mitigate the effect of the behavior of the person who lacks that self-awareness.
Absolutely. Mm. And that's kind of the beauty of doing this work with the horses, right? Too. I mean, okay. Yes, we're lucky to have this training that allows us to bring a lot of the horse wisdom and horse skill to the place of business. People don't have to work with the horses to get some of this knowledge. But it is a real gift to have that time with the horses.
The difference with the horses is it takes the horses don't have an ego and we do. And so the difference with the horses is when an individual has an opportunity to experience success, setting a boundary with a horse, asking a horse to move, which really, leading or directing a horse in a way that we would use as a metaphor for the workplace, then when they have experienced some success with that, what I've witnessed over and over again is their confidence in their ability to be able to transfer that to the workplace and transfer that to a relationship just grows exponentially. And you can see the light bulbs go on. You can see that there's something that they hadn't contemplated before. Now they've had success with that, and all of a sudden it becomes very real to them. They've embodied the experience of success. So they know what it feels like. They can recall those sensations of success, the articulation verbally of success when we talk about them with it afterwards. And if we spend time saying, how can you transfer this to the workplace, they're easily able to identify those ways that they can transfer their learning directly to their relationships at work. So there's no question that the sentient being that the horse is, its non-judgmental nature and its ability to be able to tap into our energy and intention certainly equips them to be able to show up in a very real way with the horse and take some meaningful learning from that.
Fantastic. What about an organization that is more or less running smoothly? They don't have any massive bumps in the road. And the general atmosphere is pretty good. How would they benefit from this kind of work with the horses?
Well, we can always get better. And so, I think about the work that Jim Collins has written in his book called Good to Great. And to me, it's an invitation to go from good to great. So what do we need to learn about each other that has us show up with and for each other in a way that we can individually and collectively get better? And so it's an invitation to take that journey, to move from maybe even mediocrity to something that is better. And the experience of working in an aligned team where everybody wants the collective success and that's what everybody is working toward is such a phenomenal experience. And yes, does exist. it does exist, as we've seen, that's the opportunity. That's the opportunity to go from good to great and to invite them into a space that they may have a taste of, but this is really hosting a different kind of buffet and saying, come on, we can do this. We can up our game here. We can get better and we can all enjoy the ride along the way.
Love that. Love that. Let's talk bottom lines. I know there's a lot of stuff out there, whether it's literature or programs that really emphasize having these soft skills, really emphasizes the bottom line and really helps that. Has that actually been your experience? Do you actually see that in organizations that have that cohesive atmosphere? Do they actually do better in business?
Yeah, they do. They do. But let me quantify it for you. I read a statistic just last night that talked about the fact that managers spend about 2.5 hours a day in these less than ideal environments managing the discontent. So that's people dropping by their offices to say, hey, have you got a minute? Can I talk to you about this? And usually they're bringing problems, talking about people, talking about other people, not taking ownership of a problem that needs to be solved themselves. And your time is taken up with that to the tune of about 2.5 hours a day. So just take the size of an organization, take its average salary of frontline staff, and then its average salary of middle management, and then its average salary of executive management, and multiply that by 2.5 hours a day, and you can do the formula, you can do the math. We're talking about small organizations, hundreds of thousands, large organizations, millions of dollars. And, you know, that's just a very direct way to be able to measure it. It's also shows up in short-term disability, long-term disability, workers' compensation costs, workplace insurance, that is not workers' comp types of costs, and so on and so on and so on. You see things such as significant turnover in unionized environments. You see grievances. There's so many pieces of the puzzle that add to what this cost is, which can be eliminated significantly by getting that 2.5 hours a day turned around into productive, meaningful, consensual, collaborative teamwork.
Wow. That's huge. Those numbers are huge and mm-hmm. and so quantifiable, like so measurable, like what you're saying, and that's not even taking into account all of the rest of it. That's really impactful.
Yeah, it's not even taking into account the fact that, you know, if I just spoke with a manager the other day, and she said that, you know, an employee lost a day and a half, an employee who's never sick, just took herself out for a day and a half because of the toxicity in the workplace. So now we start to layer on things like doctor's visits and absence from the workplace. And we start to see the costs escalate even greater cost.
Wow. So you've had so much experience in various industries, and I know you were already a very effective coach before you decided to do Linda Kohanoff's training in Arizona. What was the deciding factor for you to go forth and really expand your professional knowledge base with this equine facilitated work?
Well, the honest answer is, I had been spending a significant amount of time on airplanes, away from home, in environments where it was clear to me that something was going on in some of these organizations where the values and the behaviors that the organization wanted to have of its leaders were something on paper, but different in action. And I got really tired and thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. And so I started to look for a better way. And of course, having horses on my own property and knowing the value that was being added to my life because they were here and I was able to engage with them in a meaningful way started the curiosity about what's out there. And some of my colleagues, too, had said to me, why don't you combine these things and see where that will take you. And totally resistant at first, you know, when the horses showed me that I was resistant. And
as they do.
And then when I opened my heart to it, things just started to fall into place. And I've had some amazing conversations with people, leaders who, leaders who think they know what it is that they want to do. And then when we start to ask them to listen to the wisdom of their body, they come to a completely different and more satisfying solution. So, you know, the path was initially because I was tired and I really believed there needed to be a better way. So I started to search for the better way, and I believe this is a better way.
Fabulous. And that's a big change that you went through. Mm-hmm. That's a transition. And mm-hmm. talking about how this work can impact people personally, professionally, a whole organization, these are all changes. And mm-hmm. I'd love to know from you, what qualities do you think are the most important that you have to develop to be able to actually make a change?
That's a really good question. Open. You know, can you be open? Can you sit in the quiet, slow your mind down, open your heart, and let your body do the work that it needs to do? If we stay with our thinking brain, which is very valuable to us, there's no question. This is not about shutting down your thinking brain. But if we stay with our thinking brain and allow our ego to do the talking, then we can talk ourselves out of a lot of things that are really, really good and meaningful for us. When we can learn to cultivate the quiet, learn to be mindful in whatever way that works for you. Think about being present and thinking about being first rather than doing first. If we can slow ourselves down and start to cultivate that space, then it makes a big difference in terms of our capacity to even contemplate change. Learning to be and with what is, rather than fret about what could be or ruminate on what needs to be done, is just a completely different shift of how you go through the world and how you look at things and how you interact with things and how you engage with things. And it takes a lot less energy to be than it does to do. And horses are exceptional at that. They save their energy for emergencies. And if we as humans could learn to do that, to be with whatever comes, then we can save our energy for true emergencies when we need to move quickly from be and into do. But we're not walking around being completely stressed out, tapped out, technologied out all the time, and we create greater capacity for ourselves.
Great answer. And I can really relate. Yeah. Gail, do you want to say anything to our listeners before we wrap up our interview today?
I would love to invite your listeners to just slow down. Put the phone down. Go out and have a walk in nature. Find your way to a horse. And then learn to trust yourself. You do have the answers inside. Sometimes you have to partner with a two-legged and four-legged coach in order to be able to find out what those answers are. And so I would ask you to slow down. Just slow down and enjoy. We're not here for a long time. But we're not meant to be miserable. So slow down, take a look around, put your phone down, enjoy would be the invitation.
I'll take it. Thank you so much, Gail.
Thank you for the time.
And thank you to everyone who's listening. I hope you really enjoyed this as much as I did. Gail is just a gem in this world to be able to share with all of you, and I'm very grateful for this experience. Till next time on My Horse Heart.